his current year, 429, to its current 560. That's significant increase in ADA in a pretty short period of time. No small feat with that. Graduates also are on the rise. As you see, a couple years ago, we had 36, then 102, then last year's all-time high of 322. As you can see, we're well on task to exceed that. We're already at 212 this year. So again, last year's total was 322. We're at 212 through November. I can also report that we've had several graduates already in December. So even though it says 212 through November, it's close to 220.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Thank you. Thank you.
And then staff, I won't necessarily go into this, but you can see that staff reasonably has continued to increase based on the more and more students that we're serving. To its November end totals of 36 certificated and 24 classified. Gives a breakdown here of this chart of each teacher and what their current loads are as through November, I should say, with a couple notes in parentheses based on those that might have smaller numbers as a reason why that is. At the bottom of the page here, we have projected ending fund balance or reserve amounts for the year, as well as cash on hand. I do not have November's in yet because it's still early. We're still working on those numbers. We should have them by the next time that I report on this, which will be about a week from now. I will send this to each of you board members so you have it. Any questions about this particular portion of school highlights?
Mine's a positive comment, meaning since you've come up and charted this, this covers so many different areas for us to see the progress and the hard work. And I really enjoy the way that you put it all together. I mean, it analyzes, it puts together our enrollment, our graduation, comparisons, staff. The statistics are tremendous on this end for what you show us. Thank you.
Charlie, I realize that you're primarily just listening in because you're busy and behind the wheel, and I don't want to endanger you. But if at any point you want to interject something, just feel free to do it. Don't even ask. Hearing nothing, my comment about this, Jerem, is it looks like we're roughly doubling in size every year. Quite an accomplishment, and that's a lot of people that are being helped. Thank you.
I'm going to move to a different portion before I turn the time over back to you for 5.2. One of the discussions that we've been having over several months, in particular since the June passage of the annual budget, we were putting in and have put in to the annual budget effective in January that we'd bring on a fourth assistant director, both budget permitting and if there is an actual need for that. And over many months as we continue to grow, as we continue to assess what the needs are of pathways, in particular with regards to leadership in this particular topic and presentation today, it was the request at the June meeting that prior to January that we have a discussion and look at what you should be seeing on your screen now. Can you confirm that you're seeing AD Division of Duties?
Yes.
Yeah. This is a, each of you have had the opportunity to take a look at this, but let's look at it a little bit more here. This is what you're seeing on your screen right now is just some of the key duties of two of our assistant directors right now. There are several more duties. This is not an exhaustive list. And I wanted to show kind of where we're currently at, but also emphasize that as I've had the opportunity to speak with each of you and again today, that there is a significant amount of duties and work that needs to be done that is not being done. And we are confident that as we continue to search for and then offer and bring on the team two more assistant directors, we'll be able to more effectively move forward and lead pathways as we continue to grow. So this screen here just shows just some of the key duties of two, again, of the assistant directors, but probably more importantly is this one here, which Tom will probably be excited about, that I got it on one screen. And so I don't have to scroll through. I eliminated some things and some commentary to make that happen. But the key here is I want to emphasize is there's quite a bit of spread of duties out over the four assistant directors. We do not, even though it's in the budget for the fourth one for January, I would be delighted, but yet surprised if that happens in January. I could foresee it more of March-ish, but we'll see. But we're very confident that as we continue to grow and then be able to disperse some of these duties out to relieve the significant load, especially that Starla has, as well as myself, and then Laura, who's still, you know, transitioning into that position because she's only been here a couple months. But we feel like this setup will be extremely helpful for Pathways. This is both quite a bit of discussion with the leadership team as well as Charter Impact, just ensuring that we're able to do that, all of which these positions are 100% instruction related. So any questions or comments about this?
I really enjoy both charts, and I'm very appreciative that you did get it onto a single sheet there. Please make sure, please forward both those charts to all three of us today. I would appreciate that. And that gives us, I think, a vision of what you're talking about in a simplified form. And I appreciate your work. Thank you.
Jerem, I'd like to echo that. I appreciate your work. And this chart in combination with enrollment and ADA data indicate to me that we're no longer a small school. And the fact that we seem to be doubling ADA on an annual basis, at least that's the current trend, we're bound to continue to grow rapidly, as this is something that we had anticipated from the beginning, realizing what a gap this school fills within the educational spectrum. Thank you for all your work.
And I have one more comment. Under those, we envisioned, or I envisioned, one of the assistant directors taking over some of the PR. Are you going to keep the PR part?
For a time being, but I will get assistance with that with one of the assistant directors.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, Rudy, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. No, one of our biggest challenges, one that Jerem has spearheaded, is the tremendous growth, and not only the increase in growth, but the expediency of the growth that we've encountered. And this is, you know, this is growing pains, but it's a good thing. And we're servicing more students and making a difference in the lives of our students. And so this is just part of, you know, the growing process. And so I appreciate Jerem's work and along with the rest of the organization in terms of meeting the challenges. So thank you.
Okay. That concludes 5.1 for me, Rudy, unless there are any other questions.
No. Well, none at this end. Let's move on to 5.2. Jerem.
Right. We have here with us Starla Tyler, our assistant director, who's been collaborating with me over some period of time with regards to many things, but particularly with regards to retention and student performance. We're having consistent meetings about both, particularly student performance and how we could more adequately track that, which we'll talk later on in other portions of the agenda. But I wanted to have an opportunity, per the request of the board at the last meeting, to talk a little bit more and look at some statistical data, particularly pertaining to retention and student performance. So Starla's prepared a brief presentation for us, and I'll turn the time over to you, Starla.
Thank you so much, Jerem. I am going to share my screen right now, and also thank you so much, board, for having me today. I'm excited to present this to you. And hello, Tabitha. Hi, Moana. Hello, Rebecca. And with that, we will get started. Okay, are you seeing the presentation?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so today I'm going to be presenting to you information about our retention and student performance data. So starting off, I'm sharing some enrollment information. This is going to echo what we just heard from Jerem, but when it comes to growth, I know we love to hear it. So why not again? So this is just year over year. So here we are in November with approximately 679 students. And as we know, back in November 2021, we had 119. But for those of us that like math and statistics and percentages, that's a 470% growth in a time range from 2021 to 2024, which is pretty astounding. I think we can all agree on. Moving forward, I'd like to talk with you a bit about our tiered re-engagement. So as a review, our tiered re-engagement plan is designed to re-engage our students by providing them with targeted intervention and individualized support. This may come in many formats. This may come with one-on-one support from a teacher, individualized meetings with a counselor. It may be tutoring sessions, weekly check-ins, a number of activities. When a student is on the tiered re-engagement plan, what that means is that they were initially placed on the plan because they were not meeting the academic expectations that their teacher outlined for them. When that happens, the teacher will go through a series of steps, which are shown over here. And again, these steps are something that we are proud and excited to provide our students. This tiered re-engagement plan, in that we're providing tiered re-engagement for 69% of our students, this means that we are actively working individually and very personally and concentrated support for this number of students. A large percent of our students are receiving this support, but even further, a large percent of our students are becoming re-engaged. So what we're finding is that over time, we've had an opportunity to develop this plan with feedback from our teachers, feedback from our students. And what we are seeing in our graduation rate is that having these students on tiered re-engagement, providing this large number of students with this individualized intervention, is helping them get across the finish line. We are seeing growth, and we'll take a look at that in just a moment. Okay, so our graduation data. And so for this, I'd like to point out to you that the percentages that we're seeing here are the number of students that graduated out of all of our students. So this ratio, for example, if we take a look here, in this current semester of fall 2024, we have 20.5% of all of our enrolled students have graduated so far. That's a really impressive number, considering that this number takes into account every student that has enrolled here, regardless of how many incoming credits they've come in with. So there may be a student who has come to us and they need all 130 credits. This 20% encompasses, this is a percentage of that total number of enrolled students, not just the senior students or just the juniors and seniors. So out of all of the students in our school currently, we've got 20%. One thing I'd like to point out is that we can see a growth from fall 2023 to fall 2024. So in a year, we've got a 2% growth here. Now, in the spring, of course, we know to expect that we'll have a higher percentage of graduates, right? It comes with being the second semester of school. It's part of being the spring semester. That's when you'll always see an increase. So we expect that from the fall to the spring, we'll see about a 10% increase. And the great thing about that is if we're expecting that this year, we are maybe expecting to go from a 20% to 30%. 35% maybe once we get to spring 2025. So we're pleased with the growth that we're seeing in our graduation. Withdrawals. So when a student leaves our school, we consider that a withdrawal. And we break that down into two categories. We have either voluntary withdrawals or involuntary. A voluntary withdrawal is just that it's a student that chose to leave the school. They may choose to leave for a variety of reasons. Oftentimes, our students might voluntarily withdraw because they've moved out of state, or sometimes they've transferred to another school, and sometimes they've chose to stop out and leave school at that time for their own personal life reasons. Involuntary withdrawal would be a situation in which the student did not meet academic expectations. They were placed on the tiered re-engagement plan. They've moved through all the steps, but unfortunately, although with all the effort of the teacher and counselor, they were not able to re-engage academically, and as such, they've been withdrawn from the school. And so the trend that we're seeing with our withdrawals is really exciting, and I'd like to go over that with you. So a year ago in the fall 2023 semester, we had 7%, 7.3% of our students voluntarily withdrew. They chose to leave. In the spring semester, earlier this year, we had 5% of our students choosing to leave. At this time, we are now down to just 3.9% of students this semester that have voluntarily chose to leave. What is the reason for it? Well, it could be a lot of reasons. Every year, every semester, every month, every week, we are honing our skills. We are shoring up our processes. We are sharing best practices amongst the teaching community. And we are creating a culture every day that's becoming more of a wraparound culture for our students. The addition of our counselors, the instructional assistants, all of these things together are creating an environment that students are choosing not to leave, they're choosing to stay. Likewise, you can see a decrease in the involuntary withdrawals as well. And so back in fall 2023, we had 24.7%, moving into 20% in the spring. And now this current semester, we've only had 13.2% involuntary withdrawals, which is really very impressive in that involuntary withdrawals, again, are students that have moved through the tiered re-engagement process. And so we are essentially engaging them, right? So we're starting off with 69% on this tiered re-engagement, but through the course of these steps, the interventions are working. They're getting re-engaged. They're not getting involuntarily withdrawn, and they're staying with us.
Can we stick with the previous screen for a moment?
Yes.
By the way, this is wonderful information. Under the voluntary chose to stop out, there could be a lot of reasons for that, and I'm wondering if you have more data that we can drill down to at some point.
Yes, that's a really good question. And actually, one of the processes that we're working with right now in collaboration with Lara is developing a survey for our students that choose to exit to get details about the very specific reasons they're choosing to stop out. So that's actually in the works right now. And we're hoping to be able to have that data and aggregate that data soon to be able to share with you.
Great, because I think that that's a critical piece of information.
Yes, I agree.
I'm glad that you're working on it. Thank you. That's
Thank you. Any other questions on this slide before I move on?
no.
Okay. All right, so with our retention data, so this retention data, these are the students that, well, basically that didn't withdraw, right? The students that we retained, students that remained. In this case, we're looking at on a semester basis, so for the full semester, or students that graduated. And so we're also seeing some growth here. So in a year ago, in fall 2023, we retained 79.6% of our students. Jumping ahead a year, we're now up to 82.8%, which is a pretty good increase. Now, as we expect, in the spring semester, you will have a retention rate that's typically lower than the fall. The students here in this spring semester are oftentimes students that stayed with us for the full school year, right? So they may have enrolled in August and they're staying with us all the way until the end of spring. So you're having students from two different semesters that are coming together in the spring. And then again, at the end of the school year, as the year concludes and it closes up, sometimes you'll have students that choose to voluntarily withdraw. And so we will expect to see that there will be a variance here, a 5% variance, which seems typical. What we'll look at again is when we get into spring 2025, if this pattern keeps, right? And so will the retention when compared year over year continue to increase based off all of the trends that we're seeing in the data? We absolutely expect that it will. We're pleased to show that we are retaining currently over 82% of our students. All right. And that actually concludes our data presentation. I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
First, excellent report. That's the kind of data we've been looking for years, but we haven't had staff to really get it for us. Now we have a counseling department. I love the word wraparound culture. I think the whole culture of our charter has changed with the principles of excellence and the wraparound culture, our counseling department, the tiers, all the positive things. And just long as you can keep working and trying to find out what's working best and with the student survey, because when we do have students that have graduated, you know, we've heard them just rave about, they felt good, people were helping them. So, you know, we're on the right track for usually a difficult part of a population that has, for some reason, checked out, they want to finish, and we're being very successful. And I think you guys are changing a lot of lives in a positive way. Thank you.
Thank you.
So,
yeah, Charlotte,
go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Rudy. Yeah, great presentation. And that last comment, 88% of our students were retaining, as Tom said, for our student population. That's just simply amazing.
Yes.
And so I'm glad to hear that we have a well-established process for retaining our students. You know, many of our students need that safety net. And I was sharing with Jerem the other day that the key element is that connection between staff and students. That's most critical in making sure that we are meeting the needs of the students and we're establishing student success. So kudos to you and the process that we've established. And again, what Tom said, we're making a big difference in the lives of our students. So thank you.
Thank you.
So when we were a small school, especially in the beginning, what I would have anticipated is that the students that enroll would kind of be, it's a bad term to use, but cream of the crop. By that, I mean tend to be the more self-motivated students and the ones with the least challenges. As you grow and your student body grows, then I would expect that there would be more and more students that would come into the program with greater and greater challenges, and that kind of trend would continue. What I'm seeing from your data is that retention is improving as a opposed to declining, and that's the opposite of what I would expect if you have more students coming in with more difficult challenges. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, what is the reason for that good track? And at this point, it seems to me that it's the student intervention programs and initiatives that you have been working on. Is there something beyond that that might explain it?
Yes, that's a really good question. I believe one additional thing that might explain it is the addition of our student engagement specialist, which is Erica. And so her role is designed to support the teachers in discovering ways that they can connect with their students on a personal level. And so she provides them with professional development, tricks of the trade, personal one-on-one support for the teachers, and helps them develop the skills to establish this really strong connection with their students. We feel that that's a really important factor. In addition to that, we also have our curriculum and instruction specialist, which is Megan, and that's providing the teachers with the support on the other side. That's the hard skills, the black and white, using the curriculum and using it in the best way that suits the students. So those two positions supporting our teaching staff, in addition to the counseling staff, and in addition to the tiered re-engagement that you mentioned, I think all work together to show this growth.
Thank you. And given that we are a private nonprofit, public benefit a corporation, an emphasis on public benefit, I think that this is a model that at some point with a little bit more experience and track record, that this is a model that ought to be not a secret. I think it's something that could be shared. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you as well. Are there any other questions or comments?
No.
Thank you so much, Jeremy, for that opportunity. And thank you, board, for letting me present.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Stara. Thank you. To move reading to 5.3?
5.3, yes. I'm sorry. Let's do that.
Okay. All right. I'd like to turn the time over to Moana, who has prepared a presentation for a loss update for the request of the board to bring us up to date a little bit about what's been happening with WASC and where we're at now. Moana?
Great. Thank you, Jerome, and thank you, board. I appreciate the time to meet with you guys today and to share this information with you. Let me see if I can get my screen to share my report, and we'll talk about WASC. I'm fumbling here. So
you want me to share my screen with it?
Could you do that? And then I can just ask you to change the slides as we go along, if that's okay.
Sure. Sorry. I'll do that.
Sorry, I'm letting you down, Tabitha.
Okay, you should be seeing the WASC update now. Is that correct?
That's perfect. I can see it. Thank you.
I want to put this into a slide. Right. There we go. That looks better. At least I think it does.
So first of all, I want to ask if you can hear me. Every time I get into my office and I start to work, my neighbor decides to do yard work. So I just want to make sure that you can hear me clearly, because all I hear is him.
Yes, we can.
So are we good with the sound level from me?
Very good.
Perfect. Okay, if we can go to the next slide. I just wanted to say that after listening to Starla's presentation, hope was going to ask Starla to please share that with me. When we look at WASC and we look at accreditation, a lot of the information that she shared has everything to do with how we look at how we provide support, academic support for our students, and how we really focus on the goals of pathways in helping students to achieve their goals. So I took a lot of notes, so thank you for that. When we look at accreditation, what we look at is, are we providing high quality learning? Do we clearly demonstrate self-improvement? Are we focused on our goals for our students? Do we examine student performance continuously? Do we maintain a qualified faculty? And do we collaboratively assess the quality of our educational program on a regular basis? And do we provide continual future learning for our staff? So on our next slide, as you can see, when we look at collecting evidence to address all of those areas, we go through this continual self-improvement assessment. And these happen through our meetings that we have, and we have a variety of them, which includes our board meetings when we look at the information such as Starler just shared with us. So we look at how do we raise our bar of academic success for our school? And so we go through a continuous cycle of reflection, assessment, planning, and implementation. And on our next slide, you can see that we look at our mission statement. We do have our student learner outcomes, and both of those are on our school website for everyone to see. Then we look at, do we have a quality online content? Do we provide the quality academic instruction that is state aligned for our students? And we do that through our Edgenuity curriculum. We provide the evidence for WASC when we go through our accreditation process of the curriculum and courses that are provided, a list of our graduation requirements, and then our assessment resources that we have. And then we look at how we examine our student performance. And so we go through that process of looking at the information that's provided through Edgenuity. The teachers get ongoing information that updates them and how their students are doing. As you can see over here in the side, it says confidential. The evidence that we have does include student names and student information. So that is something that we restrict, that we would only share with WASC when they're with us. And then we would remove that access to that information after the WASC visitation. We have a monthly school report that is done. We have a weekly report that is done. We have the Young Adult Success Academy homeroom schedule. We have our English learner enrollment data. We have the asynchronous staff student support. We have Pathways dashboard data, and then we have our chronic absenteeism data that we look at and we report on to show our improvement and our growth when we meet with WASC. Are there any questions on this slide before I go on to the next one?
Is that tiered report also going to be on there?
The tiered report, I actually have a note right here asking Starler to please share that with me, because that report really does is a good focus on how we focus on student engagement, and that tiered support has a lot to do with that. So that absolutely will be included, especially during that WASC visit for our mid-year report, because I think it's an excellent data and example of how we do that continuous looking at how we support our students. So absolutely that will be on there.
And I haven't seen the whole report, but a new word that's come up is this, our pathways wraparound culture for our students.
Tom, we're on the same page. I have that written down.
Okay. Thank you.
Our new wraparound culture, I love it too. So yes, absolutely.
Those were things that mean a lot to me, and I just want to make sure we get to share that when we get to WASC. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important for us to include that into WASC. It's also important for us to include that into our LCAP. So those will definitely be included in that.
Thank you.
So the next slide, Jerem, please. So we look at how do we collaborate. How do we collaborate to assess our educational programs? And we have a variety of meetings that are ongoing. We have the executive leadership meetings. We have leadership team meetings. We have the young adult student team meetings, teacher team meetings. We have accountability and compliance meetings. I put in there, it's once every 2 weeks, but it's a good time for us to share data and talk about what we see in the data. and then the weekly special ed team meeting and admissions meetings. And then how do we provide continual professional learning for our staff? There's instructional assistance training, there's teacher training manual, there's the Edgenuity training that occurs, there's monthly teacher meetings with Megan, and then there's our list of professional development and staff meeting. And that includes the staff training and professional development that happens in the staff meetings that are held. Are there any questions about this slide before we move on to the next one?
No, just that, you know, our foundation, again, is still the principles of excellence. And it was mentioned, that is mentioned at every one of our meetings when they start. So I didn't know where you bring that in and let the WAS know about. I mean, that's a real foundation of what we're doing, the principles of excellence.
Mm-hmm. I think what might be added is the monitoring by the board of directors as well. When we're given this kind of information to review at meetings, we're part of that process too.
Right, absolutely. The board meetings, the list of the board meetings that and the agendas that have occurred will also be included on that list as evidence to WASC to show that. And then they'll be able to see, based on the list of the topics that are in the agendas, all of that and all that's been covered.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And then also, I just wanted to remind you that this conversation and what I'm sharing with you, it's just an overview of some of the things that go into it. This, a big part of WASC visitation is being able to provide evidence for everything that we say that we do. So once that process begins where we start writing the narrative to answer each of these different areas, these things come in as evidence off to the side to show that here's what we say we do, here's the evidence that we are actually doing that.
Very good.
Okay, the next slide. I actually think this is the last slide. The next slide, Jeremy, I think it's just if you have any questions.
Won't go to the next slide, so.
Yeah, next slide.
There, for some reason it doesn't go to the next slide.
Okay.
Let me try something here. That looks like that's the last slide. Slide, yeah.
Okay, so basically, I guess the information that I you probably want to know is when does that mid-year visitation happen, and is it going to be an on-site visitation or will it be a virtual visit? And it will be a virtual visit. It'll happen. Geez, I'm trying to remember. We haven't received a date yet. We have to go online when we're able to go online and they allow us to put in a request to do that visit. So the mid-year will probably happen sometime. I'm just putting that out there, just guessing that'll maybe be November or December. I can't promise you that that's the exact time when it'll be because we haven't had an opportunity to be given a calendar to choose a date yet. But I continue to check the WASC website and our homepage. And then I wait for that to open up so that we can schedule that. But we are preparing for it now.
Good.
It's wonderful to see how proactive you are. And Moana, my experience in observing you is that you're always proactive. We couldn't have a better leader for the a WASC. I hope that faculty and staff would be encouraged to serve on visiting committees to go to other schools. There's that aspect of WASC that's important, both in terms of us supporting WASC, because it's through those volunteers that this process is effective. And also, every time you go on a visit, you learn something.
Absolutely.
And bring that back. And so I think it's really important to encourage faculty and staff to volunteer for WASC visitations of other schools.
Absolutely, I agree. The last visit committee that I participated in for on behalf of Pathways, I learned so much that it really helped me with the work that I do for Pathways on this side to really understand what a visiting committee is looking for. But besides that, it was an eye opener to learn so much from the school that we visited, the teachers and the parents and the students and the staff. It was an eye opener for me, and it was very motivating. Actually, I learned a lot. So I would agree that I would encourage people who can to volunteer to serve on a committee. You learn a lot.
It can be a career changer.
Absolutely. Okay, so that concludes my WASC presentation.
Thank you, Moana.
You're welcome. Thank you.
On to item 5.5, Jerem.
So 5.4 is about the local control accountability plan. We are required to do a mid-year update in a public setting with the board, and Moana is taking on that in collaboration with myself and several of the other staff, and as we prepare to provide an update about what's been happening with the LCAB. Moana, can I turn some time over to you again for that?
Yes, please. And if you could please share my presentation, I'd appreciate that as well, Jerem. Thank you.
Can you see that presentation currently on the screen? I'm going to close this one out. Do you see that presentation now, everybody?
I do.
Okay, I'm going to put it in this format. All right.
So it's just a reminder, and it's something that I have to remind myself whenever I do the LCAP and I do the mid-year report and the annual report, that what I'm actually looking at is the year prior, which becomes confusing. And as educators, we all know that anytime we look at what happened last year, it's kind of like a moot point. But what we do get out of it is to learn from our past and what our successes were, and then any barriers that we may have come up across, and any of the solutions that we came up with and how we've continued to move forward. So it's a good opportunity to be reflective, and that's a big part of WASC. And it's a big part of what we do, that we reflect on where we've been, what we've done, and how we've gotten to where we are now. So if we look at our next slide, if we go to the next slide, please, Jerem, thank you. So the requirements for our mid-year update is basically that we have to share this report on or before February 28th. So we're sharing that with you now. We'll also be sharing it with our educational partners. The mid-year report is different from the annual report in that the mid-year report is just an update with looking at where we're at, taking a look at the budget, which Rebecca will be sharing with you. And then I guess it's just, instead of waiting to the end of the year like we have done in the past, it's an opportunity to look at it now and then to see what's working and or if there's anything that we need to fix. So that's what we're doing right now. The template that we use for document tracking. Document Tracking Services is a state approved vendor, and their template that we use is also state approved. Document tracking is used extensively across California by multiple education districts. All the schools are basically using it because it's frankly a very good vendor to use. And then where it asks about if the update will be reported in the LCAP, the mid-year report is not included in the LCAP. However, soon we'll be working on the annual update, which will be part of the LCAP. Okay, so next slide. So when we look at our LCAP and our mid-year report, what we do is we look for if there's been any major changes, if there are, we look at our required metrics to make sure that they're all included. All of our local indicator information metrics were included last year as required. All of our metrics are in place. And then we just review our goals and our actions, and we determine if we're moving in the right direction. And that's what happens during our mid-year report. All of our goals are focused on improving our and supporting the academic achievement of our students. So as you can see in goal one, we focus on improving the academic achievement of our students through effective instruction, challenging, engaging curriculum, aligned assessments. And part of the report that STAR shared has everything to do with our LCAP goals, in that we are reflecting, we are looking, and we are checking to see that we are engaging our students and then keeping them in engaged in the process of completing their academic goals onto graduation. And so the next slide. So our LCAP goal two, we look at our average daily attendance, and we saw that report from Jerem that was pretty much in-depth report on how we're doing with our enrollment and our ADA. And then we focus on doing that by providing a positive school climate, by including high quality teachers, evidence-based practices, and strategies and interventions to ensure that our students are engaged and their success for all of our students. And then finally, we have our LCAP goal three, which is on our next slide. We really focus on establishing connections and partnerships with our families and our community to increase engagement, involvement, ensure safety and satisfaction to support their learning and success of our students. And I think that's probably at the heart of everything that we do at Pathways. And when we look at what our mission and what our goal statements are all about, it's about supporting our students and helping them achieve the goals that they have to graduate, to get their certificate. And so our last one is questions and comments, if you have any questions.
Update for Pathways. I enjoy from the beginning when we worked together, Moana, to now. And Moana, have you seen the changes in Pathways over our years together?
I'm very, very proud to be a part of Pathways. And I have said this, I believe, in one of Jerem's staff meetings, and I've said it to Jerem, and I'll say it to you, that I feel very fortunate that during my time in my career in education, which is 30 plus years, that I've had the opportunity to work with a program in a community where it's positive, it's totally focused on doing the best for our students, it's focused on lifting up the staff and helping them to, and providing them with the support that they need to be successful. It's been a refreshing and very promising and will be a good memory for me that will end my career in education, that I've had a positive experience working in education. And I've gotten that from Pathways. So you absolutely have seen a change from the time that we started with Jerem from the very beginning. And we've been there. I know I see you smiling, Tom. And the growth in how he's built this organization to what it is now. So I'm very, very proud and fortunate and have a lot of gratitude to be able to have been a part of that.
Thank you very much.
Now, Moana, we just want to say thank you for your presentations. Very informative, as always. We truly appreciate you and all you do for us. So thank you.
Thank you.
I want to echo what both Tom and Charlie said, and it's gratifying to hear you talk about this experience in terms of your overall career. What you're experiencing, not everybody gets. Let's put it that way.
Thank you very much.
I think we're ready to move on to item 5.5 now, administrative expense priorities discussion. Jerem, please lead us on.
Great. So moving on to 5.5, I know one of the priorities that we're looking at here, are you still able to see my screen? Or are you seeing the administrative priorities presentation now?
No, we see the agenda. Okay, here we go.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so it's been, before we get into 5.5, we'll echo what Moana was saying. We appreciate, on the other end of that, Moana's contribution and consistent reliability here at Pathway. She's been fantastic. So 5.5 here, administrative expense priorities. We've discussed on a number of occasions the need for us to ensure that we are using the budget and the funds that come in effectively, and particularly as it pertains to administrative expenses, because it's such a small piece of the pie, if you will, of the overall budget. We want to be strategic in using those funds most appropriately. At the last board meeting in September, Charter Impact presented, among several things, one of which was a slide or two pertaining to what it feels is the effective use of administrative priority expenses and funds based on the needs and projected needs of Pathways. This is very similar to that, with some just slight changes. In the first slide you're seeing here, it's just a general overview of administrative costs, right? It's limited, as we've talked about, and must be for necessary items. Albeit that we want to make sure that it never exceeds 20% of the revenue in the budget, it should really and recommended that it be 15%. In large part because it's critical that we meet the 80% instruction-related costs, which is the most critical part of the budget in order for us to continue to receive full funding. There's just a few examples there in the third bullet of what administrative costs are. Well, there's several examples, none in any particular order, just listing off so we can kind of understand and for reminder of what are some examples of administrative costs. Before I move to the next slide, any questions about this slide?
No. Charlie?
No, thank you.
My comment is that this represents a conservative approach, and I totally support that.
Good. Next slide here really gives a budget forecast, not only for the remainder of this year, but for next year as well, meaning the next 18 months, being that we're going into January here pretty soon. And these are specifically based on current needs and how is the recommendation based on significant collaboration with Charter Impact, particularly Rebecca at Charter Impact, as well as the executive leadership team in general, mid-level leadership and our accountability data specialist, our instruction and curriculum coordinator, and so forth. Due to what we've listed here is due to specific needs regarding current pending litigation, we definitely need to make legal one of the top priorities of ensuring that we have sufficient funds and administrative related costs that is associated with legal. Again, why? Due to current pending litigation and any other unforeseen, litigation, which we we're not concerned about any of that right now, but it always could be. The other portion of this is a list of several things here, starting with loan interest. But the crux of this is it's because of school growth, because we are growing, which we've talked about a number of times in this meeting today, but particularly as we continue to grow, the cost of interest on any loans for cash flow purposes, the insurance of property and casualty will increase. Human resource services will increase as we continue to increase the enrollment in ADA, and particularly the staff associated with making the organization move forward. As we continue to move forward and grow, it's become very apparent that we need to ensure that Pathways continues to have the future ability to serve such a underserved population, and that would be accomplished through the fourth bullet there with legislative advocacy and the lobbyists. Also, as we continue to grow, there's needs in non-instructional related support staff, although Pathways has very small amount of that currently, and we'll always continue to keep it that way and only bring on those that we need. As we continue to grow, the back office cost or CFO is a factor that needs to definitely be considered and incorporated, as well as marketing. We're working on some targeted marketing specifically right now for our WIOA, in that we want to ensure that the overwhelming vast majority of our students, if not 100% of them, are always associated with some sort of WIOA organization. Now, towards the bottom, Paul, these are important things to consider. They're not currently in the budget, but could and should be revisited if we need to towards the end of this year, meaning for next year's budget. That would be the cost of administrative cost of additional board members, moving from 4 or 5. Also, the key to point out, which we've discussed in other settings, the cost of additional board members, which we'll get into probably later in the agenda, isn't necessarily pertaining to the cost of the actual board member, albeit that there is, you know, but it's really the change in the responsibilities that would be associated with the CEO as well as the instructional assistant. I'm sorry, the executive assistant. Non-instruction ratio time change. Those are administrative costs that we need to factor in and be cognizant of. But large part, that first portion of the top here, up here, if you're able to see my cursor moving around, these are and should be the priorities and are built into the budget accordingly. Any questions, comments about that?
Jerome, I have a question on that. Needs due to school growth. Also in there, I think, should be listed administration increases for the director and assistant directors and anybody who is charged off to the administrative budget.
Those are not, so there's an administrative portion and there's the instruction related portion. So all the ones that you listed there, any ADs or directors, those are instruction related positions, not administrative related cost for the budget.
Whatever is an administrative cost in terms of salary and benefits.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I think what should be included in there is any administrative costs related to salary and benefits.
Yeah, though currently those are predominantly instruction related, but yeah, you definitely are, would be a smaller portion and you could consider those as well, yes.
Please go on.
Well, that's any questions about this at this point?
What is the CEO's recommendation in terms? I mean, is this your recommendation that the emphasis under the column needs due to school growth? I mean, is that where the money runs out after that?
That's the recommendation, yes, of myself with, you know, again, collaboration with Charter Impact and down the Charter Impact as well as other members of the leadership team. We don't want to have other priorities because that could endanger the meeting of the instruction-related portion of the budget.
So these bullets represent items that the board has no ability to consider increasing or decreasing the costs of?
State that again, please.
Well, maybe a better way of putting it is that there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bullets. The expenditures budgeted for those 7 bullets, that's where the money rolls out for administrative expenses, correct?
Yeah, I would say the 8 bullets, because we want to include legal in that as well. Yeah, and these are incorporated in the annual budget, and particularly the first interim budget that is before the board today.
So, for example, of those, I could see that we would have the ability to choose. We may not want to, but we would have the ability to choose whether or not we even want to spend any more money on marketing.
Yes.
The board has that ability to make that decision. I'm not recommending that we do. I think it's important. But in terms of loan interest, there's no insurance, human resources, legislative advocacy. There is a choice there. Non-instructional support staff, I don't see a choice there. So of those 7 bullets, there are 2 of them that we could look at further and decide on how much money we want to allocate for legislative advocacy and for marketing.
Yes, and both of those 2 components, as well as the other ones, are in first interim budget as well.
Okay, so maybe when we get to that, on the agenda, we'll find out what the costs are relative to those 2 items.
Yeah, I know that in marketing, there's $5,000, and in lobbyists, $30,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Tom or Charlie, any questions there?
No questions, thank you.
I like it moving forward, and early enough that we got to see this and think about it, and a good part of our meeting. Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. I have no more with regards to 5.5.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I don't have anything else with regards to 5.5.
Hearing no more comments about item 5.5, let's move on to 5.6.
5.6 is a proposal to increase the number of board meetings that we currently have. So I thought it would be good to have a discussion from each of us, each of the board members, about what their interest is and desire to do an increase in the number of board meetings. Rudy?
Okay, start out with your time.
We have our board meetings set up now that they're effective at the number that we have. And at any time we need another board meeting, we can add it currently. I do not see a need to increase the numbers presently. The organization of them and adding to what's on those lists or what's handled in executive session and evaluations for time concerns could be talked about. With board meetings, preparation and follow-up was added. I looked at about 7 topics, but the main one right now, we've worked hard to get it on this schedule, and the schedule is working. And I just think if it's a time constraint thing, we've moved and figured out how to move the evaluation to the end so that doesn't affect the length of the meetings. Currently, Jerem is every month meeting with us, not just before a board meeting. He meets with us monthly and updates us. And currently we're on topic of all of our goals for the year, and we're doing all of our future planning and setting goals for our charter and with our CEO. So I feel what we're doing currently is working. And if we need to add another meeting, if something comes up, we can add it. But I would not want to start rescheduling just to add another meeting. That's my opinion.
Charlie, are you there?
Yes, I am. I agree with Tom. I don't, at this point, feel like we need to increase the number of board meetings. Past practice has been that we've had limited board meetings, but when we need to meet, Jerome sets an agenda and we do meet, and it seemed to have the flexibility between the three of us to meet the needs of any urgency in terms of meetings. So at this point, I agree with Tom that we should, that I think we don't need to increase the number of board meetings. Thank you.
Okay. When we were a small school, we had more board meetings, and we met in person in San Marcos. Then COVID hit, and we adjusted things. We started a meeting virtually, as we are now, and we reduced the number of meetings initially because what we were faced with was the challenge that we were told we would need to meet in the county where we had the most students. Subsequent to that, found out that we had other options in that regard, that we did not have to meet physically in the county where there were the most students. So we established this practice of these five meetings. And since that time, we have grown 470% in terms of enrollment. We have continued to, in the meetings that we have scheduled, be able to make the decisions that we have to in terms of meeting deadlines and budgetary. But we have, what we have not had is a real good track record of just brainstorming and planning in general. I think that's given the rapid growth that we have and given what we're looking at in the future, we should spend more time doing that and should, I'm sorry, I heard some noise background. Charlie, that's not you trying to shut me up, is it? we really don't as a board get to talk and plan because of the restrictions of the Brown Act. And the only place we can do it is in an open session. And I just feel like we're not doing it enough. And that if we don't schedule it, if we just wait because someone brings it up, that it just doesn't move forward the same as if had it already scheduled in the board schedule. We took time, for example, when we wanted to ensure that we had something in place if the organization lost its CEO for whatever reason. Personal or professionally, and we took the time to do that. but it kind of was forced into the schedule that we have. If we had more meetings available to us, more of that kind of action would take place. We haven't done anything in the last 7 years in terms of board replacement, for example. We don't have a process in place for selecting a replacement board member. We don't have a process in place that says what our criteria is for a new board member. That's going to be a discussion later on in the agenda. That should be taking place, quite frankly, come September, we're going to be faced with the need to replace a board member, and I don't see in the structure of meetings that we have that we can really do the adequate planning for that unless we add board meetings. So I know there's the argument that we can add them anytime we want, but that takes time to do it because it requires adding time into the schedule and making every sure everyone's available. If we have a slot there and we have the ability and the time to add in items for planning, I think that we would be doing a better job in our responsibilities to ensure that the corporation moves forward during this time where we have this rapid expansion. So I strongly recommend that we consider increasing the number of board meetings and making it easier for us to take on these items for planning. Any further discussion?
I had one more point on one of those items. What we used to do, and I still would like to do it in February, not at another board meeting, but at a study session, which we could have open discussions at a study session. We could talk about how we think about adding a board member or things. We can discuss that at a study session. And we could have at that same study session brainstorming our futures, which is hard to do with when we have it on our agenda. And I would like to have a study session, not a board a board meeting with all of our work, but a study session in February so that we could start early planning for a possible opening that could be happening with a board member. And I would like to recommend, well, two separate things. One, I want to keep with our calendar, like I said, but we can always add study sessions or board. And when that came up, I started thinking of two areas. One, I wanted us to get together and have a study session where we come together with Jerem and Tabitha and us. It's an open meeting, but usually that'll be all that'll show up. And then we can discuss our views and concerns openly with each other. And and the first item, these are not policies. So as long as we keep it to discussions, that's what we do. Because before, we did have a process. A person had to apply and the board has to accept them. So that's how we got Rudy. He had to apply. And then we had to say yay or nay. The present board members do that. But so I recommend, and I wanted to put it in because after reading Rudy's concerns and my studying and going over our board meeting schedules, I would like to have it sooner than later. And that's why I wanted February, a couple hours in February. So there's two items there. One, I wanted, so you ask, I did have one more thing on that, but there's actually brings it into two things. One, do we stay with our, this was a discussion staying with our other ones, but I want to add something into the discussion about having a study session in February.
Charlie. Charlie, are you there? Okay, I don't hear him.
He's back on, Rudy. He just took it off mute. Go ahead, Charlie.
Looks to me like he's still on mute.
He took it off just a second ago, and then there he goes again. Yes.
Okay, going back and forth. I apologize. The other vehicle that we can possibly tap into is our CEO's evaluation performance committee that we have in terms of, brainstorming ideas and becoming more informative. When we have these WASC interviews as a board member, I want to be well informed in terms of detail, what's happening within our organization, the process, the programs, and so forth. And I think that we might possibly be able to do that via the evaluation process.
Thank you. So what I get out of this is that in terms of board meetings relative to the business of the organization and the day-to-day type of requirements, that the meetings that we have right now scheduled and the schedule that we have is adequate. And I agree with that. What I hear is that all three of us would like to be able to spend more time on the bigger picture type of planning items, and that can be done with study sessions, which I agree. I agree that can be even more effective in terms of study sessions. So I think we're on the same, pretty much on the same page. I think it's a matter of semantics, whether we call it a board meeting or we call it a study session. And I am fully supportive of adding time for us to have study session, to have good back and forth discussions in terms of planning. What my preference would be is that in the schedule, we schedule study sessions. Maybe we don't even know what the topic is going to be when the schedule is put together, but at least we have the time slot there available, and people can make plug them into their calendars, so it's easy for us to do that. And then maybe if we're scheduled to have one come up and we decide that we don't want or need one, or somebody might have an unavoidable conflict, well, then we can reschedule that. So if that is satisfactory with the other board members, that's something that's quite satisfactory with me.
Tom Schaff, that's me. I'm very open to that because that's the part that we used to do, and we've been doing it. We've set a lot of direction as a board for our charter. We really have. We've set goals for our CEO. We've set discussions of our future. We've done a lot of that. We used to have study sessions, and I thought they were very informative because we'd get in there and we can do them virtually. We get there with somebody, typing. Jerem's a fabulous typer, like a whiteboard. And I think having two study sessions I do still want one in February because there's some topics coming up that I want to have us work on before the end of the year. And then summer is a good time to have a study session because we don't have a lot of business going on. And so I would like to have two study sessions scheduled, but there, if there is no demand, then we don't have them. And yeah. And there's different ways of doing that. And, you know, so Charlie, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree, Tom. My only concern was when I was hearing this was that we're going to schedule and we're going to have them, you know, regardless whether we need them or not. As long as we know that if there's no topics at hand that we really are urgent and we need to talk about, that we wouldn't have one. We one thing we haven't considered is we need to be sensitive to the time of our administrators and staff, because it takes their time as well away from their focus, which is our students. And so that being said, I'm in agreement.
So we can, when we get to the item on the agenda for the calendar, I think then we can select a date in February, as Tom has suggested, and maybe we can come to agreement on a date during the summer, as you have suggested, Tom. What I hope that we would wind up doing on the calendar for 25-26 is to plug in a couple of dates like that, so that we have the study sessions on the calendar. People can do that in advance, and then if it turns out that no one comes up with a topic that we need to discuss, then we could either postpone it or cancel it.
One more comment. Whoever our next board chairman is, could they also communicate and have a running list of possible topics that we could, you know, we'll keep it ongoing. So it's just not something, I would much rather to have topics, you know, if we have an emergency, we always meet for an emergency, but I would like to be able to build in the topics and make sure we've got, you know, we can all work towards getting ready for that topic or topics.
So we established quite a while back that any of the board members can suggest topics. Jerem also provided us with a timeline of when we should do that for board meetings. And since that time, we have had very little scheduled in that regard. That's why, again, I think we should have at least a couple of dates on the 25-26 calendar that are set aside for study sessions. And sure, the list that you talk about, Tom, makes a whole lot of sense.
Thank you.
So where I think we are on this is that we're in agreement that we need two study sessions, one in February and one over the summer, and that we can make a decision about whether or not we plug in additional dates in the 25-26 calendar for study sessions.
And you're saying when we get to the item on calendar, we'll discuss it there.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Are you good with that, Charlie?
I'm in agreement.
Okay. Given that, we can move on to the consent calendar. Items listed under the consent calendar are considered routine and will be approved and adopted by a single motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items. However, any item may be removed from the consent calendar upon the request of any board member, discussed and acted upon separately. Is there any request to pull any items from the consent calendar? Hearing none, Can I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I so make a motion to approve our consent calendar for this meeting.
Seconded, Sarvey.
Okay, it has been seconded. Let's take a vote. Tom?
Aye.
Charlie? Aye. And Rudy? Aye. Passes 3-0. Before we move on to item 7, which is an action item, I think we should take about a 5-minute break since we've been at it for...
I think Rudy just, I know that at some point pretty quickly or soon here, Charlie's going to need to take a break. So maybe we should wait for what he needs to and then take that break at that time? Or do you want to take more than one break?
No, that would be fine. I know he's waiting for the doctor.
And that's when you have to do a break.
Yeah. But we don't know when that's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just making a suggestion based on in the past, we had a couple of people that said it's nice to take a break every once in a while. But I can go on if everybody else is ready to go on.
Charlie, how's your schedule?
Yeah, I have about 15 minutes until I have to check in. I will keep online until I actually get called into the doctor's office.
Okay, let's move on to item number 7, which is an action item, approval of the 23-24 school accountability report card. Jerem, lead us on.
We need an...
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Do I have a motion to open item 7.1?
Open 7.1 for approval and discussion.
I second it, Charlie.
And opened it and seconded. Let's have our discussion with Jerem leading us.
Yeah, thank you. Moana, I'll turn the time over to you for a brief presentation about 7.1. You want me to share my screen?
Yes, please. Moana? Yes, please. Thank you, Jerem.
Okay, I'll share that. And let me put it like this. Okay, go ahead, Moana.
Okay, so I know you guys are well versed on the school accountability report card. We do this every year. So basically what the school accountability report card does is it just shares some information about our school. It includes information about our school progress and reaching our goals. And the information we are reporting on is a reflection of the 2023-2024 school year. And we are required to submit our SARC to the state no later than February 1st. So this is a great opportunity for us to share this with you now. So if we can go to our next screen. Again, I've talked to you about document tracking and the vendor that we use and how it is state approved. And so we use that template that is provided by them, which is the same template that the state uses. So our school accountability report card, the purpose is to provide all our educational partners and the public with important information about our school. It's an effective way for our school to report on its progress and achieving goals, and the public may also use the SARC to evaluate and compare our schools on a variety of indicators. So on our next slide, there are parts of the SARC that we complete, we fill in, and it's with our local indicator information. The first area is our school description, and it requests the information about the name of our school, the school address, who our executive director is. It asks about our mission statement and our core values. So we complete that, and that is completed in the template as of now. It also asks about the quality, the currency, and the availability of textbooks and other materials. And we've reported that Edgenuity is our online curriculum, and that 0% of our students lack access to online curriculum. It asks about our school facility condition. We report that our program is virtual, that we do not have a facility, we do not have on-campus instruction. And then it asks about our school climate, and we report our zero suspensions and our zero expulsions. Okay, and then in the next slide, we also report on our engagement and parent involvement. And I'm just going to read what is what's written in there. Pathways serve students that are 16 years or older. Therefore, most all of our involvement is through the students. We strengthen our relationships between families, programs, authorizers, and the community to create a learning environment that supports everyone. Opportunities for students and families to participate and provide input is communicated and available through input surveys, our school social media page, and our teacher-student-parent meetings. And as far as professional development, to ensure our continued delivery of instruction to every student at Pathways, and to ensure the health and safety of our entire school community, Pathway staff participates in a variety of professional development and staff training. And here are some of the examples. Through Vector Solutions, the staff participates in training that is required training, the cybersecurity, drug-free workplace, mandated reporter, child abuse and neglect, sexual harassment prevention. We go through the comprehensive school safety plan. We review that. We share it with our educational partners. And we provide opportunities for input, and which involves all asking questions and getting clarity. And then we've also noted in our school accountability report card that our school safety plan will likely be approved by our school board December 10th, 2024. If it is approved by you today, then that will change to read that it was approved by our school board December 10th, 2024. We also participate in workplace violence plan training. Our initial training was in June of 2024, and then we'll have another training, which is required annual training on it, which is January 30th of 2025. Our professional development and team building topics are presented at team meetings. Some of the discussions that we've had and presentations that we have had is navigating childhood trauma, going through the 7 habits of highly effective people, productive, proactive, authentic, solutions-oriented mindset. Are there any questions about those two areas that we report on?
Tom? No. Do we report on, I do have one question. Under looking at last year's report, it talks about the number of suspensions. Is that from state data or our data?
So we report that locally, but the state also reports that as well. So our 0% suspensions and 0% expulsions, once the state includes that information, it'll be the same.
Well, on the report from last year, it said we had, 2.3. Okay, that's our district, 11, district, state. Okay, so it is at zero. I looked at it and said the state was only 3.6, and it doesn't make sense to me.
Right. Yes, when the SARC is, when the reports are completed, they report our data, and then they compare it to the school district of our authorizer, and then it reports the data of the state, so it compares those three.
That helped me a lot, because when that means that they incorporate Warner Springs, and I did not understand that. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, thank you. Next slide, please, Jerome. So then we go through this process of waiting for the state to complete to fill in the template with information that we cannot fill in ourselves, that they fill in for us. And that's based on the information that we input into our CalPADS. So during the month of December, we are waiting for them to complete that update. And they'll include the student enrollment by grade and ethnicity, the conditions of learning, which they look at teacher preparation and placement. They look at the credentials of our teachers, if we have any misassignments, which we do not. We have teachers who are teaching out of field. And then what that means would be general education limited assignment permit, special education limited assignment permit, short-term waivers or emergency English learner permits. They look at our pupil outcomes, our California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress, our CAS results, our CTE participation, our UC CSU course enrollment completion, and grade 9 physical fitness test results. The next slide, please, Jerome. So then they look at our pupil engagement, our dropout rate, and our graduation rate by student group, our chronic absenteeism by student group, and then they report on our average class size and class size distribution. They report on our ratio of pupils to academic counselors, and then our teacher and administrative salaries and percent of students in AP courses. So that information, will be included and uploaded by the state. And then once that information is all uploaded, then I will print out a PDF with that report, with all that data. And then Jerome will probably pass that on to you. Next slide, please. So it must be published and submitted no later than February 1st. And basically, as I've shared with you, we've reviewed the template and we've made updates to information as required. And we are currently waiting for the remaining fields to be auto-populated by the state. I think that's our last slide. Are there any questions?
None.
Charlie's muted. I have no questions. I'll give Charlie just a minute.
None from me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, Moana, we appreciate the reports, the quality of the reports that you provide for us. Let's take a vote on approving the 2023-2024 School Accountability Report Card. Tom?
Aye.
Charlie?
Aye.
And Rudy? Aye. 3-0. Thank you, Moana.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay, moving on to action item 8.1 under business and financial services. 8.1 is the approval of the Clifton Larson Allen annual audit report for the year ending June 30, 2024. Do I have a motion to open this item for action?
I so make
a move, Charlie. 8.1 action item.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Tom?
It's open for discussion.
Open now for discussion. Okay. Jerem, would you please lead us on?
Yes, thank you, board, for this. 8.1, we've invited Lily from CLA to join us, and I'll turn a few minutes over to Lily.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and share screens and let me know if you can't see this. Perfect. All right. So today's agenda is to go over the required communications. Then I have a few highlights on the financial statements. And then I also wanted to share a little bit of what is coming up in the pipeline for 2025 and 2026. So first of all, the required communications, you guys do have a clean opinion, so an unmodified opinion. I think this is truly a testament of your management team looking over the numbers and ensuring that what is presented to you guys is accurate and kind of in line with the audit. So on the required communications, if there were any accounting policy changes in the current year, we would disclose that in note one. There were no such policy changes in the current year. Accounting estimates are typically just small areas where it's mostly how your functional expense is broken out and management's estimate there. Nothing is particularly sensitive to the financial statements. On the financial statements, it's clear, consistent, and neutral with prior years. There were no significant unusual transactions, difficulties, or disagreements with management. So on every audit, we have a level of materiality in which we think your users of your financial statements would care if something was misrepresented. This would come up if we found an error and then proposed it to management, and then they can accept or decline on recording the adjustment. So we're happy to say that there was no corrected misstatements, and there was also no uncorrected misstatements, so nothing that we proposed. So this really means that when you get those interim financial statements, they should be pretty spot on for what they would be at year end, minus maybe some year end accruals. So good job to your management team there, and also, of course, Charter Impact. As we conclude our audit, we will get the representation letter from management. This will just be a letter that says everything they provided is factual and complete to the best of their ability. If there were any consultations with other independent auditors or accountants, this typically happens when there is an opinion shopping and a disagreement. We do disclose that. There were no such consultations. And then on the financial statements, just wanted to call out a couple different things. So you might have noticed the layout looks a little different. Your LEA page with names of all the board members used to be a little bit higher in the supplementary information. Now it's in this other information paragraph. The CDE likes change. We kind of fought back and said it doesn't make a difference. It's the context is the same, but they wanted us to include that in other information rather than supplementary information. So I'll show you where that is on the financials. Any questions on the required before about what's coming up?
None.
Charlie?
No questions.
Okay, perfect. So what is coming up? This doesn't really pertain to you, but I know a lot of you sit on boards of other non-for-profits as well. But if you do have lease agreements or contracts with other common controlled entities and there's no written agreements, there will be kind of some accounting guidance that comes out. Again, this won't really pertain to PAAE. On other upcoming changes, I will share this with the board too, and everyone on this call. We honestly just got this about a week ago, but in here I do have some resources for you guys just on non-for-profits and the impact of how to keep your cybersecurity safe and all that good stuff. And then there's also a report strategy. These are all blogs. They're probably about 2 to 5 minutes long to read, but wanted to share that. And then, of course, the CDE loves changes. So with this, there will be some new changes. Everything in here is not applicable to you. Some of these things are not applicable to you, but some of them are. So kindergarten, of course, not applicable to you. But independent studies. So there is quite a lot of discussion about new independent study rules. This is based off of our participation in the appeals board and that panel that we sit on. So we have 3 or 4 people sitting on that in our local office. And these are just kind of the rumors that we've heard. So nothing is set in stone, but there are some things on how you record your calculation for time value, and then also the hours here. So this part will pertain to you. We don't know what it looks like on the audit side and what that looks like and what they want us to include into the scope. So these are changes for next year. And then also changes for the year after. So you won't have ELOP or TK or immunization. And then attendance, I don't think you'll have at all. And then the last one is just comprehensive safety plan, and then more to come for independent study. But again, these are just 2 years out. And as we hear more, we will share more as well. So I will provide that so you have that in full context. And then on the financial statements, just some big highlighted items. So again, the other matters for that LEA page broken out separately than on the supplementary information. And then here, so just kind of wanted to comment, I know folks like looking at the statement of functional expenses and where you put your dollars. So you have 88% in your program expenses, and then only about 12 in your G&A. So that's pretty high. We see that quite a lot for the charter schools and non-for-profit space. So you're doing, every dollar that you do get is spent on your program. One footnote here, so going on to page 9 of the financial statements, this is the conditional grants. So you do have grants in which you are allocated funds of up to $400,000, of which 260 9, 270,000 has already been received and is sitting in cash and deferred revenue. This has not yet been recognized because you have not fulfilled the requirements under that condition. But once you do, you can recognize that piece. And then on the loans, you do have two outstanding loans payable. One is a loan and one is a line of credit. So we included that in the financial statements. And then on the supplementary information, just a little bit of a change. So this page used to say not applicable because you were a non-classroom based school. And now they actually want us to show on your tracks how many days you did teach those to say that it was in compliance or not in compliance. So you are in compliance and you have the required minimum, which is 175. And then again, the LEA page just out of order from what it was in last year, but it's just broken out after other information. All right, any questions?
Charlie.
No questions, thank you.
I have no questions. Okay, thank you very much for this information, and let's take a vote on approval. Tom? Charlie?
Aye.
And Rudy, aye. Okay, moving on to 8.2, an action item, approval of the 2024-2025 first interim financial report. Recommended the board approve the 2024-25 report for Pathways. Do I have a motion to open this item for discussion and approval?
I so make a motion to open 8.2 for discussion and action.
Seconded, Charlie.
Moved and seconded. We'll have the discussion. Jerem, please start out.
Yes, thank you. We have Rebecca here who's going to give a presentation pertaining to the first interim budget, and I'll turn the time over to you, Rebecca. Thank you.
Jerem, board, and other staff for the opportunity to present to you here today. This is your first interim presentation for, it's kind of the first opportunity for us to check in with your authorizing district and the state and say, hey, here's how we're doing, here's how things are looking for the year. And so the first interim captures July through October, so these are also your October financials. Some highlights as we look, as we've already talked about, your ADA continues to grow. So we have updated the projected budget to an ADA forecast of 553 from what was previously at 456. So that was a 21% increase to that. The revenue has gone up 1.45 million. That's predominantly from the LCFF, special education and lottery. All of that pertains to funding that grows as your ADA counts increase. Those also go up. Your expenses have gone up 1.6 million. This is predominantly from personnel increases. So as you serve more students, you need more people to serve those students and to keep track of all that I's dotting and the T's crossing. So that's what that is. I've got a little more detail in a next slide. Your line of credit, we increased to 1.5 million. For that line recently with your bank, through October, there was $885,000 that was drawn on the line. With the projected and ongoing growth, we will likely need an additional line of credit increase around February to make sure that we continue to have the funding to sustain payroll. So we've got kind of that addressed in a later, I think, agenda item as well. Days cash on hand is 23 at the end of October. And then
excuse me, Rebecca. I need to sign out. Yeah.
There. And then next to me when he comes back. So we want to take a short break here, and then he'll text me when he's coming back.
Makes sense.
Rebecca was like, oh, I was almost there.
How close? That's okay. All right. I don't mind.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, until we hear back from Charlie, right?
What I'll do is once Charlie texts me, I will text everybody on this who's currently here right now to come back in.
Okay.
You can or cannot. You don't need to necessarily come back in unless you want to, Moana.
You do still have a quorum, though.
Yes, we do. You're right. I guess that would be up to the board if you wanted to wait for Charlie or not for this particular item. I think it would be good to wait for him for certainly 9.1, but whatever the board would like to do. I think you're on mute, Rudy. I think you're on mute, Rudy. We can't hear you for some reason.
I'm sorry. If Moana could have left after her report, I would have suggested continuing on. But since you're going to be around for an item beyond that, then I suggest that we do take a break until we hear back from Charlie and that you text us.
Okay, very good. We'll just put on hold here and I'll turn my camera and video off, but I'm running my video and sound off, but we'll join back in soon.
Screen shared again. Sorry about the press for time, but
that's okay. It's very understandable. We apologize to you.
All right. So here we are back in the first interim report. So I believe I had just presented you have 23 days of cash on hand at the end of October and that you are in compliance with all of the ratios for the pupil to teacher, as well as the certificated and the percent of instructional. So you are below the 25-1, above the certificated 40% required, and above the required instructional 80% spend. So looking good. Revenue, as I mentioned, for the predominantly increase was from just the ADA going up, so revenue sources went up. The expenses in personnel, there's quite a few positions added as growth has happened within the school. So looking at teachers, instructional aides, student support clerks, a one-time sick leave payout, and some sort of human resources, which may be in personnel or actually may be still as a consultant cost, one of the two areas. So those were the primary. We also looked at professional services, had an increase from legal, adding the advocacy consultant that was mentioned by Jerem earlier of $30,000. And then the impact of increased revenue on the management charter services as well as oversight. So there's some additional information here, but trying to kind of move us along, but hopefully not too quickly, but quickly enough. Looking at the fund balance with all of these changes, we initially had budgeted a surplus of $282,000 for the year. That has decreased, so we're running a little bit tighter, but still have a nice forecast of $137,601 for this year, which will be 8.5% of annual expenses. So we would like to see that growing and building, but the challenge is as you grow, then that number needs to grow, you know, significantly to keep up with just the growth. So we're still doing well. It's a nice positive number. And, you know, as you grow, that will continue. Then in your appendices, just the new item is there is your actual first interim with your alternate form. So it's got a lot of little teeny tiny numbers that are hard to see. But this is the report that will actually be submitted. And it has all the same numbers that were in my report. It just is got some colors and looks a little different. But it's got your revenues, your expenditures, your fund balance reconciliation from the previous year, and then it's got a multi-year projection. So it's got numbers for this year and then the next two out years. Although that odd, their template had the wrong years there. But that does conclude my presentation. If there's any questions, I would be happy to address those.
No questions now.
I have two questions. One is to verify that our total anticipated revenue for this year's 7,500,000?
No, this year is 8,549,207 in total. The total LCFF so is the 7,500,000, but then you've also got some federal and state revenue.
Okay. In your professional opinion, based on your experiences, does that categorize us as a small school or medium-sized school?
I think based on your ADA, you're certainly starting to become a medium-sized school.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. Good report. Appreciate it. Later on in the agenda, we're going to have an item for the organizational structure on the board, and it is my intent to nominate you for a CFO. I just wanted you to be aware of that because I know you might not be able to be here for that item.
Yes, that is fine, Jerem, and I have discussed it and checked with my supervisors, and they've approved that I can serve in that capacity.
Great. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you for your patience, and we're sorry that we needed to do that to you this time.
Oh, it's understandable. Just, you know, I only have so long allotted, so okay. I appreciate your flexibility as well.
Let's take a vote on it. This is to approve the first interim financial report. Tom?
Aye.
Rudy, aye. And Charlie absent. So it passes 2-0. Thank you very much, Rebecca. Okay. I think we're ready to move on to action item 8.3, consideration and approval of a resolution for a line of credit with East West Bank. Can I have a motion to open this item for discussion and action?
I so make a motion to open 8.3 for discussion and action.
And I second that motion. Jerem, will you start us out?
Sure. We've looked at several different options in order to be able to continue to maintain growth and also receive what we feel is the most effective service from our banking institution that we partner with. In looking at several different options, several different banks in particular, we've concluded that what would be most effective for Pathways as we continue to grow, based primarily on the relationship, specifically the knowledge that East West Bank has about charter schools, particularly non-classroom-based charter schools, the level of service, as well as the best terms that we feel like Pathways should make a transition to consider and approve the resolutions for authorizing the opening of a bank and establishment of a line of credit with East West Bank and authorizing signatory for all related documents. It's my recommendation that we move forward with that.
Tom, do you have any questions?
Is there any difference in cost?
We'll be paying less than we are now.
That's a nice difference.
Yeah, their terms specifically on the line of credit, they are willing to fund you up to $2 million, which I think you're going to need based on the additional growth. Plus, on top of that, give you $100,000 for a credit card rather than taking that out of the $2 million, which is kind of what's done currently. And then their interest rate will be lower than what we're getting with the current bank.
And Rebecca, your recommendation also is to go with this East West Bank?
Correct.
Excellent, thank you very much.
I have a question. Who else did we consider?
Did Hanami Bank, and we looked at Citizens Bank. We looked at Bank of California, which is our current bank, to see what they can do. And of course, we've also considered in the past, relevant to this, Chase.
Okay. I appreciate that that much effort going into this opening of an account. Any other questions or comments?
None.
Hearing none, let's take the vote. Tom?
Aye.
Rudy, aye. Charlie, absent. Passes 2-0. Okay, so we're now at item 9.1. I think we should wait until Charlie is able to come back on that. Do you agree, Tom?
Yes, but Charlie would agree. Should we? Can we do 9.2?
9.2. Sure. Item 9.2 is an action item, the election of the board member officer positions. Do I hear the first one is for the chair of the board? Do I hear a motion to open these items for action and discussion?
Open, so move motion 9.2 for action and discussion and possible exception, accept it as a block group.
Okay, the first one is chair of the board, and I move that Thomas Schaff, I move for him to be chairman of the board. Do I have a second?
I second that.
Okay, so what you were suggesting, I think, is that we go down all of them
and just accept
them. And then accept them all as a block. Okay, then do I have a motion for vice chair of the board?
Vice chair of the board would be Charlie Padilla.
That's your motion, Tom?
Yes.
And I second that. Chief Financial Officer, I move that we have Rebecca Heinrichsee as on the ballot for Chief Financial Officer.
I second that.
Okay. And then can I have a motion for Clerk of the Board?
A motion of the Clerk of the Board, wouldn't that be Tabitha?
Okay, move for Tabitha, seconded by Rudy. Okay, so we have a block where we have a motion for Thomas Schaff for Chair of the Board, Charlie Padilla for Vice Chair of the Board, Rebecca Heinrichsee for Chief Financial Officer, and Tabitha Richard for Clerk of the Board. Do I have, let's take the vote. Tom?
Aye.
Rudy, aye. Charlie, absent, so it passes 2-0. Congratulations, Tom. I want to pass on this gavel to you.
Okay, and Rudy,